This is Spade, Spoon, Soul, a podcast about all the ways in which food intersects with our faith from seed to spade to spoon. Hi, everyone. I'm Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs. I'm the Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese in Indianapolis, and I'm coming to you from downtown Indianapolis, where we, at the time of this recording, have just had the renewal of vows for our clergy because we are in the midst of Holy Week here. And it's a delight to welcome you all back to the podcast.
And I'm Brian Sellers Peterson, and I am coming to you from the east slope of the Cascade Mountains in Washington State. And I have the blessing of doing all sorts of things around agrarian ministry in the Episcopal Church. One worth noting is Good News Gardens, which a number of our listeners are part of. So it's good to be here today. I'm sitting on the land of the Yakima Nation. And I'm really excited about this because I got to visit St. Stephen's in Sebastopol. I think it was a couple of years ago, and I was just taken by all the wonderful ways they work in the community. Their congregation really takes advantage of the land that they are on for the benefit of all creation in that part of the world. So we're joined today by the rector, Christy Laborda-Harris, and Liza Bricky. Liza's on the vestry, and so, you know, let's kick this, what promises to be a great conversation. Let's kick it off.
So, Christy and Liza, one of the ways we love to start this podcast off is with a question, which is, where are you rooted? And you can take that question anywhere you'd like it to go, but if each of you would take a turn at that, we'd love to hear about where you are rooted.
Oh, that's a great question. And, you know, several years ago, our church made a land acknowledgement statement of the land that we were standing on and practicing on. And we, as a church, also came up with a land statement ourselves of where, with our spiritual practice, we feel our relationship to the land. And I thought that might be a good thing to open with. So I'm going to speak as if you're on our land right now. Okay, and so to anyone who hears it, we welcome you. Beloved community, the people of St. Stephen's Episcopal Church welcome you. The land you are standing on is a part of our ancestral homelands of the Southern Pomo and Coast Miwok peoples. We acknowledge the sacredness of earth, the land, the air, the water, living creatures, and all of creation. May each breath we take remind us of the blessing of this life, as well as the profound kinship we share with all creation. As we begin to restore our relationship to this land, the earth recovers and reawakens. And as we tend to this land, the land tends to us. May your experience on this land be a blessing to you. All are welcome. This is sacred ground.
Well, that's beautiful. I would love to hear more about how that came to be. That's language that you don't always hear in those land acknowledgement statements. So that's beautiful. Christy, how would you describe being rooted? Do you want to add to that at all or speak from a different perspective?
That's a great question. I have been at St. Stephen's for 13 years now, and I think it is the longest I've been anywhere since I was a child. And it has been and continues to be a privilege to grow my roots here, my family's roots. My husband is from this area. I'm from the Philadelphia area. And it's funny, a number of years back, my spiritual director challenged me to think about call as both call to a congregation, but also potentially call to a place. And that has continued to echo really true for me over the years as I feel like I've had the opportunity to sort of look up from the parish ministry to the older sense of the term parish, the more traditional one of the wider community, and the way in which St. Stephen's is rooted in and has been part of that community for over 50 years, 60, 70 years, and has been given opportunities in these past decade plus to reconnect to that wider, to reroute in this space, but with the current community that surrounds us. We talk about roots a lot here, seeds a lot here. And so I really appreciate that question, because for me, it's been part of trusting the roots that I am growing here and getting to claim that this is the place that my family and I are planted in this community of St. Stephen's and of Sebastopol.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And that inspires me to say something more about rootedness. I have been here 30 years in Sebastopol. And I was talking to Christy about one of the joys of being here is I am teaching godly play. I'm teaching Sunday school. And I feel this whole circle. I'm now teaching the kids I knew as children. Like I knew certain families that are now the parents of 30 and 40 year olds, but I knew them as 12 years old and 14 years old. And so there's this the rootedness of the full circle, you know, and it just, that's one of the joys I'm really getting about being here.
I love that. I'm just sitting with your words, the rootedness of the full circle, which does require a bit of a call to stabilitas, right? Being able to stay long enough, be rooted long enough to be able to experience that. And it's a gift when you're able to do that. I think it's more and more rare these days, you know. So St. Stephen's has been at this a while, 50, 60 years. So tell us about, tell us about all of this, a little bit of the history of you've gotten so deeply involved in creation care. How did that start?
Yeah, so St. Stephen's was founded in 1958, and this property that we are on, I believe we landed on in the early 60s, and it's 4 acres, right? It was right outside the downtown, but then has been incorporated since, so we are technically city. And 4 acres is a sizable chunk, and when I got here, I thought, oh my gosh, we are the only church that is not in the kind of downtown main drag. We're not visible from the main two roads, and we're kind of off the beaten track. And, you know, somebody said to me, our field out front, which is no longer a field, but was a field with a split rail fence, we would just get a call every June or July from the fire department to hack it down for fire safety. And so somebody said, oh, that church is still open. I wasn't sure because, you know, the field would get kind of wrangly and it wasn't as well known. Sorry, where was I going with that? Oh yeah. And so when the land was purchased, they did the classic thing where they built what was going to long-term be the parish hall, but thought they'd use it as the sanctuary. And later there were plans to build this enormous sanctuary. You know, and Christendom took some turns, and we didn't, that enormous sanctuary was never built. The building was paid off with cooking these prime rib dinners. And so we worship in what was originally going to be a parish hall. And a lot of the property was open and was unused, to my knowledge, basically until we started doing what we're doing, which started really in 2015, 2016. We would occasionally play kickball. There had been a playground at one point. When I got here, there were enormous tires halfway sunk into the yard. I asked if a truck had been subsumed into the earth or what had happened, but they were the remnants of a play area from preschool back in the day.
Oh, yeah,
a preschool that with people my age went to.
Yes.
Yeah. Before I came during the interim period, a group approached the church and the interim about starting a garden here to grow seed. It was part of a movement called Transition Sebastopol, and it's now called the Sebastopol Community Seed Garden
and library.
And so that was really the first thing the year before I came that they started growing for seeds specifically, not harvesting the produce, and then but harvesting the seeds and storing them on site, which I didn't know, I think, until your visit, Brian, how rare it is to have the plants grown for seed and the library on the same property.
Yeah. So one thing I also want to say is that it just in terms of the lay of the land, up the hill, Luther Burbank, who was a naturalist, a very famous farmer and agrarian, came here and thought that this land that we are on is some of the best land to grow and plant on in the United States and maybe in the world. I'm not sure exactly what place, but at least, you know, in California. And he grew the Gravenstein apple. He grew a lot of walnuts and everything. So we are on this land that he had already, when he sought the United States over, where was the best land? We are on it. And there's still a walnut tree down by our entryway that's from that original group of walnuts that he planted. And then in 2008, there was a movement in our church to have low-income housing on our land. And or just before 2008, and because of the recession that happened there, it didn't happen. So the 4 acres were free for something else. And then all these things that Christy just said began to percolate and grow.
I think related to all of what you said is sort of your commitment and interest in permaculture. And I think it's your relationship with, is it Occidental Arts
and Ecology
Center. So talk to us. There's a lot of interest in permaculture.
Well, I mean, one thing that I love about permaculture, and I have only learned from Occidental Ecology and the Arts coming here many times. And so, but one of the things is to think in terms of 3D. A lot of people think about this as 4 acres of land here, and that's a beautiful thing. But permaculture thinks up, and so the trees and the birds and the moisture and everything above us, and then to the land and everything below us too. So there's this golden loam soil, there's the aquifer. We actually say we're walking on water because we have one of these incredible aquifers below us. So I think one of the great things to think about with permaculture is thinking 3D and to perpetuate a vitality, a sustainability, and food, habitat, community building, and a sense of the sacred. So those are the things when I think about permaculture, it's for all species, for humans and for all species. I know that's a lot of information in a short period of time, but do you want to say something about that, Christy, or question?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, in terms of our timeline, we had a parishioner dream about us beginning to worship outside and having that opportunity on a regular basis, which really intersected for a lot of folks with their spirituality, where they encounter God the most in our community. And so that was kind of our first, beyond the seed garden, our first big step outside. And it was right kind of as that was finishing that we connected with Occidental Arts and Ecology. And so they brought a class, they brought a large class of students who were to plan an overall master permaculture plan for our property. And they ended up presenting like 3 or 4 different ones, which we then kind of chose the pieces of. And so that has been a huge gift in terms of having plans for where we're headed. And we have not even, I mean, we've done a lot, but there's so much more that can happen, especially in terms of permaculture. They told us, I can't remember the exact number, but the horrific amount of water rolls off our parking lot, which we have a large parking lot and it's angled. And so a lot of it, it's just a huge surface area that it runs off and then gets collected into sewers, which don't allow it to seep in and soak in as much as it were it falling into areas that could catch it better. And so down the road, one thing we'll do is see if there's any grants available through the city or the county, because we're a recharge zone for the aquifer, that we could do some changes on our parking area. So there's tons and tons of stuff. We've kind of really started with more of the planting and enriching the soil piece of things. But it's been a gift from them, because our congregation was older, or we're tending.
It was. When Christy was giving this speech a couple of years ago, she said, well, our congregation's older now.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah. There's a shift.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so to have them and their classes come and do a lot of the manual work, the labor to get stuff planted and to mm-hmm. prepare the land has been a huge gift, plus just the knowledge and background on permaculture.
And I think along with Luther Burbank, I think there's something special on this land because we put wood chips all over our front area to sort of stop the weeds. And we broadcast California poppies all over too, just in case anything would happen. And then the first or the second year, we had a carpet of orange. It's like all those plants went through the chips and it was just one of those miraculous springs.
Yeah. It was 2020 because it was like in the midst of the early pandemic and it was just beautiful and everything else was closed. And so it was really lovely to have such a beautiful spot here.
But I think like in terms of permaculture, it's a simple thing in a way. Like one of the parishioners, like Christy said, one of the parishioners wanted to be outside for sacred services. Another parishioner saw this land and she wanted to plant a fruit orchard of different fruit trees so that people in our local community could come and just walk on the land and have food source for them. You know, that they wouldn't have to go to the store, that was available. Now we work in other ways also through the food bank and through our Saturday table meals, but how can the land offer that too? So that was like, it's just a simple way of thinking about permaculture to begin with. And then there's all these more complex ways of thinking in this biodiversity that we're working with. But simple things like that were our beginning steps for permaculture.
I was going to say, my daughter and her friend, who's a parishioner here as well, one day insisted that they wanted their play date here at the church because they needed more property. They needed more property to be on. Now, our yard was not big enough. And so I was in my office and they just kind of ran around. It's real safe. And they made a fruit salad. They had brought like random things, like not an actual knife, but just random things that they'd kind of secreted away from the house. They were probably seven. And they like harvested a pomegranate. They harvested I don't remember what else was in season. Yeah. Right. And just put it together and made themselves a fruit salad on their play date together on the property. And that just makes me really happy and excited to, you know, because that is a value of our wider community here is that kind of connection with where our food comes from. And people see that honestly, and it's not something they expect of churches. When we have both in this St. Stephen's community and when the Occidental Arts and Ecology comes in, and I usually get to speak to the students there and they come from the Bay Area, but also well beyond there. And we have had so many folks comment that they are just so excited and happy to see a church caring about the land in this way. And that it's not what they assume. It's not kind of the stereotype that they carry. So that has been a gift too.
And I think, I think along those lines, Christy, is like your children, when they think of church, they're thinking of this archway, this like archway that's made out of old redwood branches, you know, and that's got fruit trees in it. So like Christy's children, all these children are, their view of church is a garden, is a labyrinth, is a playground, you know, is singing, you know, and walking around and having a good time and being able to, the church is an outside experience as well as inside.
Okay. You've got an awesome playground. and I want you to talk a little bit about that, but I want to know, how do kids and playgrounds fit into your whole understanding of permaculture?
You want to start with
that's
that?
Good question. Wait.
Well, you know, like when you think about permaculture is community building. So, you know, it's for all species, human and all species, food, habitat, community building, and a sense of the sacred.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, Christy, like how is play a sense of the sacred?
Yeah. I mean, I think in that it helps, play helps us connect with kind of some of the deepest parts of ourselves and open ourselves to deep things. You know, the reason I often, if possible, like to tell a joke or get someone to laugh in a sermon is once we open ourselves to laughter, we also tend to open ourselves to other strong emotions, to grief, to amazement and wonder. And so, you know, we built a play area next to our outdoor worship space. So if you look at kind of the back of our property, our outdoor sacred space is what we call the worship space. And it's actually on the same axis as the aisle down our indoor sanctuary. So the two altars are opposing with one long path between them. And then to one side, we have built a labyrinth, an outdoor 40-foot shart style labyrinth. Mm-hmm. And then to the other side is this play area, which is kind of a naturalistic Waldorf style play area. So like mm-hmm. a berm and a tunnel, mm-hmm. and it's planted with all these plants that my children eat. They call them honeysuckle. They're not all honeysuckle, but they just go ahead and eat them because mm-hmm. that's what they've learned, and a play house. And so what is really lovely is that that is the kids' area. I mean, the whole property, I think they think belongs to them, but well, it does. But they're out there, whether it's winter and they kind of pour out toward the end of the service into that area, or when we're worshiping outside it's varied. You know, when we came back in 21, we were out there from May through October. Yeah. And they can play on the play area and we can hear the laughter and giggles and sometimes screams because it is right next to the sacred space. I think that footprint is part of our, you know, it's very much a part of our human footprint on this property and the way that they're interacting with the plants. And, you know, we rent some space to, a couple that does music classes for 0 to 5 year olds and their adult. And so we have 200 people a week coming onto the property for that. And so most of the time during the week after those classes, the parents, whoever is with those kids, are out by our play area talking and mm-hmm. hanging out and spending time together. And I don't know, maybe I don't know exactly where it ties in with permaculture, but it ties in with life, just having so much life and activity and energy and laughter mm-hmm. and joy on the property around the week that our church, our Sunday service is big and bountiful, but it's sharing the week with all these other forms of life and energy.
And, you know, I was thinking, because if I can say, you know, that the beginning of your original plan, a lot of times in our community, the kids would play in the Barlow, which is, there's a lot of restaurants there. So kids would play around cement areas and parking lot. I mean, it was all sanctioned off, so that was safe for there. But kids playing in parking lots, as opposed to kids playing with mounds and trees and birds and all this spectrum, this 3D spectrum of what nature can be, which is permaculture and biodiversity. And how does that affect our hearts, our souls, our minds, our imagination, our vision, our sense of the sacred? And I think that's where your vision was, a safe place. It was in
nature. We haven't actually talked about that piece yet.
Okay,
fine. Okay, so let me just jump in here, because what I'm hearing is like this multi-directional, spiritual, spatial, sacred space, right? And I can imagine, I think... Brian, we'll have to make sure we can post maybe a couple of pictures or something with the show notes so that folks can envision, because I haven't been there, but I've got this visual of what that long access aisle looks like and the connectivity. But the way you speak of permaculture being so deeply rooted under the ground and above, I mean, it's all very theological language that's coming to my mind.
Below, right?
Yeah. You know, I just think, you know, that every knee should bend above the earth and under the earth. And like, there's so much rich, sacred imagery that comes to mind that you get to live and play and pray over, mm-hmm. which would just seem to create such an incredible environment. And it sounds incredibly hospitable if you've got like you're a community resource, it sounds like, in that way. But it's you're painting such a beautiful image. I just am feeling very drawn in to want us to see it and to be there.
Come visit us.
For sure, next time I get out west.
One thing that's been really interesting, and I would say that Sebastopol is particularly, I mean, we are California and we are coastal. It is particularly post-Christendom here.
Right.
You know, there is a high skepticism around church. There is a deep appreciation of community, and there's a huge spiritual curiosity. So even though church might bring a lot of baggage, or Christianity might, when we kind of are able to speak to other values within that, there's a lot of connection. And what's really exciting in that vein is that when folks are on this land who are not part of our Sunday worshiping community, I have heard numerous folks articulate feeling a sense of the sacred on the property, that they've said things to me like, I don't know if it's the prayers that y'all have had here for a really long time. I don't know if it's what you're doing for the property. I have an email in my inbox from a preschool that wants to be on the property. Mm-hmm. They really appreciate what we're doing. But there's this articulation in a variety of words, whether it's sacred, divine, holy, prayer-filled, that is able to be felt here, that folks who come from completely outside even Christianity are articulating. And it's pretty amazing that is so palpable.
I appreciate that reminder, because I remember my first visit to Occidental from the East Coast. I was like, there's a vibration going on here, but I'm not quite sure it's different.
It is.
Of course, like that whole it's a spiritually rich place and people are open in one way, and yet you're opening up another opportunity for being spiritually nourished, which I think is really important.
And that's where I feel Christy is permaculture. What culture are we living in here, and how can we perpetuate the culture? How can we add to the culture that's living here and share the gifts that our spiritual tradition has? How can we open up to the culture? And Christy is really, really working with that and resonating with the resonance of this larger community.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the thing that Liza has mentioned, but we haven't quite said, is that what we're building right now by our play area is a commercial kitchen. And what this will become is we're calling it the Playground Cafe. The little subtitle, because we just got a logo designed, is Eat, Drink, Play, Connect. And this vision did start from hanging out at breweries in town with our kids and hearing from other parents that there are places, restaurants and such that had play areas for kids, because our kids were indeed playing in the parking lot. And at that point, it actually wasn't roped off, so we had to keep a good eye. From that time, I was on maternity leave and sabbatical. I started dreaming about what it would look like to have a new model of church, a new type of building community that is centered on playground and picnic table. You know, there's a model for called Gather, Transform, Send, which is what the church is about. What is church? We gather traditionally in worship at the altar. Here we'd be gathering at picnic table and playground. We are transformed by that gathering. And in this case, what St. Stephen's is saying is that we don't believe we have to be on the same spiritual journey in order to journey deeper together. And we really talk a lot about the labyrinth as a model of that. You know, there are folks who come onto this property and walk this labyrinth that did not know that labyrinths were part of the Christian tradition.
Right. I bet.
Exactly. Who've encountered it in other walks of life. And so it is a place that we can walk together on that labyrinth, following even the similar pathway, right? But holding different intentions. It's a practice that can be shared. And so how do we find those places that we can help transform each other, help each other dig deeper, not all become the same, not melting pot, right? But salad more. And then go back out into the world and make it more this place that God dreams for us. And so the vision for this is that we'll have a cafe, and that'll be a place that people can gather. And just like Sunday church, some folks will form part of more of leadership. Some folks will offer opportunities for support groups, for book studies. You know, maybe somebody wants to offer a breastfeeding support group for new mamas, whatever these little pods are that will allow deep conversation and connection. And I believe there's going to be worship experiences. We'll probably have some sort of supper church type thing with a more organic outdoor worship develop, hopefully. So we're still getting moving that way, but it's been a dream in the making for the congregation for 6 years. took a while with the pandemic. So, but we are building right now and hoping to open up this summer.
This summer.
So
summer 24.
Yeah. Wow. That's so cool. And I should add here that we got a beautiful, amazing UTO grant, United Thank Offering grant, that has made a large chunk of that kitchen possible. They granted us $145,000. We got in June of 2020. And they, thank God, extended it for us during all this time. And so that was, it was a huge piece that kept us going through all of these years of saying, okay, we've got this one piece figured out. Mm-hmm. So.
And the community has accepted it. And, you know, you've gone to the city and the congregation. So there's been all these steps.
And our neighbors are excited. I thought they might be a little like, why are you opening a restaurant in our neighborhood? And they are excited to be able to get together here on this land. So
that just sounds incredible. And I just, you know, I think about, you're using words from the College for Congregational Development. So a lot of Episcopalians will know what that is, but gather, transform, send in every way. It sounds as, I mean, you're just, the multi-layered ways in which you are living that is just extraordinary. So I wish you all the good blessings as you prepare to do something as huge as opening up a restaurant and being just a deeper community center for folks and being nourished from the land in like every way. It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
So we've got a question for you as we close.
Already?
So we love to ask this question. But what dish or meal makes you sigh with cooking comfort?
Oh my goodness. Well, my latest one. Say that question one more time.
So I want to know, what's your favorite dish, your favorite food to eat that just, you get that sort of feeling when you think about it, when you eat it?
Well, I love so much. So I love food. So, but my current thing, I'm just going to say my current thing right now is I'm making an incredible cauliflower soup with navy beans and celery and of course, garlic and onions. And I put some Parmesan cheese in there, potatoes, and I stir it up a little bit. And then you can put some crackers or chips on top of that if you want to, some chopped kale. It's delicious. I mean, that right now I'm loving that.
I saw you post that actually, and I saved it. I was like, I want to make that. That is such a hard call for me because I love food too. You know, and so I feel like you can never go wrong with tacos, but I don't know that that's like the sigh. That is just like the always enjoyment type thing. I think one of the things I've enjoyed a lot lately is figuring out how to expand a cheese board way beyond cheeses. There's two recipes that were kind of inspirational recipes, one more summer and one winter. And the summer one had all these grilled vegetables on it and kind of this like sweet and sour sauce with like, it had like, dried apricots and I think honey and vinegar and such, but you can also put pesto on there. And so you can have charcuterie and you can have cheese and you can have all the grilled veg. And then in the winter, it can pivot more and you can do like roast beets that are like slightly pickled and other winter veg like Romanesco and mm-hmm, such. Yeah. And I think what I love about it is it just highlights, like you can do a whole spread based around that, throw in some hummus or baba ganoush and really kind of accent and focus on the vegetables instead of feeling like that they just have to be a side, but they get to be in the spotlight.
So. I love that. And I love galettes too. So I could get off on galettes too. Leek galettes. I love leek galettes.
You could have a shirt getting off on galettes.
But you know what? I also want to just mention one thing is with the biodiversity in this land, we've really wanted to go, how do we monitor that the biodiversity is building? And one of the things we do is on May 1st at sunrise, we take our recorder out there and we listen to the sound of the birds. And is the sound of the birds becoming more complex, more diverse, more brilliant? And there's something called dawn biophony that happens. It's about an hour before dawn actually happens, where the birds begin to just build in a symphony, and then they just slow down around dawn, and then they start again. And so we've been measuring that over the last 5 years. And
so do you have recordings of that?
We do have
Okay,
recordings.
well, that I've got to get a link to put in the show notes. Thank
Absolutely.
you for that. So I mentioned earlier that I visited you
Remember.
2 years ago, and I'm going to be back in a month for a revival. I think you've got some cool name for it.
Fearless state, planting hope and harvesting. Oh no, it's right there.
Oh,
Planting
we'll
faith.
get that in the show notes too. But it's a revival, and the Bishop of Pennsylvania will be out there along with Canon Stephanie Spellers and Scott Gunn and Portia from your diocese
Yes, and Anthony Yen.
and Anthony Ginn. And I'm going to come and I might call in sick. I was thinking about that. And just put this podcast on live for my workshop because
Should
it's
totally
been
do
so
that.
one that would be so wonderful. And I just wish I had the time, or maybe I can figure out the time to get to Sebastopol
Yes.
before or afterwards because I love what you are all doing. But just so grateful that you're having me come back. And so looking forward to seeing you in about a month.
We're looking forward to it as well.
I'm
Yeah.
so grateful for the work you're doing. For the call.
Yeah.
You have the call and you're doing the work.
Well, lots of good fruit that's being born there. I feel like, a lot of people may think about if you're paying attention to California, you might think about only apples in Sebastopol, but clearly there is this incredible diversity of food, seed, nurture, connection that's being sown there. And what would it be like if other places had these kind of playground spaces where we have land? I mean, I again will talk about the many places around Indianapolis where we're looking at affordable housing maybe, but there's just we have a lot of land, and the Episcopal Church generally has a lot of land. We have kitchens and we have open space, which is becoming if you're going to be positive about it, it's a spiritual gift we can offer communities that we need to be offering access to more often. So I appreciate the particular ways that St. Stephen's is doing it in a way that's so authentically connected to who you have been. And so it's beautiful.
Thank
Thank
you. Thank you.
Brian, I guess we really are needing to wrap up, which I, can't stand that we have to
No,
say goodbye so much,
we
because I feel
could
like we've
keep
got so
going
much more we
today.
could talk about. I didn't even get to ask my questions about Waldorf and Rudolf Steiner and
Oh, goodness.
biodiversity. And so maybe there's a part two or a live show you can do, Brian, when you get out there. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, as a my daughter went to Waldorf, and now we've got an outdoor school at my church, which is very Waldorfish, and I
Oh,
just see so much exciting things going on.
important
So thank you,
so
guys.
important in today's world for the children
Yeah.
to have a school that is not on technology.
Exactly. Well,
Well,
thank
and
you.
do think of us on our Easter vigil. What we get to
Oh, yeah.
do is we get to gather in the dark outside in that outdoor worship space. And actually, as we're telling the story of God's people and God's love, and we go a little off script, we've got some Mary Oliver and some Wendell Berry and some James Weldon Johnson in there and some Desmond Tutu. We get to watch the sun come up and hear those birds wake up. And
That's
so
right.
sometimes we're reading poetry or reading the story of creation and hearing creation wake up around us and get to have that light come up and shout those hallelujahs.
Wait a minute. So
Really
I was just telling clergy here about like that Easter Vigil is the time when you ought to really like be as creative as you can be, because it's the story and to bring in these voices. But what time does your service start?
going to be
When do you begin?
6:15 because we 6:15 this year because we look at the sunrise and you want to get a good, this is Liza's area, but we try to get before civil twilight, because in civil twilight you can technically operate machinery, which means it's too light out. So we try to get before that. And so I think
Nautical sun twilight.
Yeah, I think sunrise is like 6:54 or something like that. And so 6:15 is when we'll gather, and hopefully some years it's a little foggy and there's not quite the drama of the sunrise. But our very first service out there, we had a formation of American white pelicans fly across our space above us. And as you know, the pelican is a symbol of Christ. And so it was pretty, like, the things like that are what make it pretty. Yeah.
That was amazing.
It's pretty, you know, I mean, and then there's ambulances and there's all that kind of disruption as well. Sure. But so we will be there this Sunday morning, hopefully, as long as it doesn't rain.
Well, blessings on all of it. And thank you both for being here on the podcast. And as Brian says, we'll make sure we get lots of links and places where folks can find you and keep track of all the amazing things you're doing out there in Sebastopol. So thank you both, Christy and Liza, for being with us today.
Thank you, Bishop Jennifer. And thank you so Brian, much. For your time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome. So we're wrapping it up. Another episode wrapped up of Triple S, Spade Spoon Soul. If you want to know more, you can find us on the Spade Spoon Soul Facebook page or email us at spadespoonsoulpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us an email and let us know how you like the show, or send us an idea if you've got another ministry or church or garden that we might want to know about, or show idea, let us know and we'll come track it down.
Yeah, and especially want to thank our team that has made this happen, particularly for Derek Weston, who produces Triple S, as we like to call it. Derek's a community organizer, an urban farmer, a filmmaker, and a Presbyterian pastor. And also to Jay Sidebotham, who's contributed to the art, and Ryan Lee for the groovy music we have.
So until next time, we hope you'll find ways to connect your soul to your spade or spoon or both. Take care, everybody.